It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 273, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, social rage on flock cameras, fake worry about technology, and the rise of school security drones.
Hey, Gary, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing well. So I noticed your first item is about a topic that, in a sense, interests you a lot more than it does me. And that's because it involves baseball.
So you're not into baseball at all?
I am not. I have been to, I want to say, two Mariners games in my entire life. And both of those were because it was a group event.
Yeah.
So we had somebody else's season tickets. So we had awesome seats. We're like five rows behind somebody's dugout, I guess. It's baseball. It's like, it's slightly more interesting than golf, but not much.
Ooh. Yeah, I like baseball. I've always been a baseball fan, originally with the Phillies growing up in Philadelphia, and then the Rockies now that I live in Colorado. And I live actually near the stadium. So I go to games, a handful of games every year, sometimes even in the afternoon, although not in this heat. But I like baseball, enjoy baseball. And I think, baseball is interesting because there's some technology involved, especially in training and stuff, but even now in the actual game that they have instant replay, they have a review called pitch review. Anyway, a lot of technology stuff. One of the things baseball has embraced is technology in the dugout. Matter of fact, I remember doing stories for MacMost when they had iPods in the dugout. So they actually would, video iPods, the players could look at their performance, review. Because a lot of what you do is you review, oh, how did I do? Oh, look, let's look at my swing from yesterday. And also, let me look at the little package they prepared of the pitcher for tomorrow. What sort of pitches the pitcher throws and stuff. And then that went to iPads. Partially, it's kind of like pilots. They had tons of papers. So they would print out tons of stuff and have these books that were available for a short period of time. Like for this game, the starting pitcher, or the state of the team, recommendations from coaches and stuff. And then they said, let's replace those with iPads where it could just be on an iPad. We don't have to print out reams of paper. And it's easier to navigate and hold and all of that. So they've had iPads in the dugouts for a while. And apparently some teams this year, the Mets being one, decided to start integrating AI features. So they actually get, this is interesting, a league-issued iPad. So it's not like bring your own iPad from home. It's like a league-issued iPad. And there's an app on there that everything goes through, and there are certain things like statistics and data and all that that's in the app. And then there's a tab for basically just access any kind of web location.
Browse the internet.
Extra stuff, right? Yeah. You can bring up. And at least one team started actually building their own little AI tool that you could access through that tab to help you just make decisions, when to substitute players, I guess, or what pitches to throw and that kind of thing. And word got out that they were doing this, and some people got alarmed and said, no, that's not going to be allowed until we figure out if it should be allowed or not. So they took that extra tab away where you can just have your own thing on it. Interesting. And it made me think of AI use, because I actually think it will be allowed once they review it, and nobody's going to use it in the long run, because it's kind of it's just a weird thing to have AI making those kind of decisions. It's just not. I mean, I like, for instance, this week I've been using AI to try to create this little audio for me to listen to in the morning when I walk my dog. And one of the things in the audio is I was like, give me a humorous quote, give me a fun fact. And it keeps picking the same quote and the same fun fact because, it's like, oh, you're asking me the same thing. I do have a variety of responses, but it's not going to be an infinite variety. So asking what pitch should be thrown next in a certain situation, or which hitter should be put in the lineup at the beginning of this inning or something. It just doesn't seem like the AI is like at the best, we'll be able to maybe match the decisions that the coaches already can make. It's just, I don't think it's going to make the genius decisions. Remember, this is we've talked about this before. This is artificial intelligence. It's simulating human intelligence. It's not necessarily saying it's smarter than humans. Sometimes it seems like that because it has a lot of data it can look at. But in a case like where you already have, like the coach in the dugout is at that moment when making that decision is probably the foremost authority on that decision. Like what's going on in the game, players on both sides, all the little details. The coach has so much information. Having AI match that, it would take a lot of work, ton of work to get all those little nuances into AI for it to make a decision. But I still think at best it would just match the coach's decision and then maybe be a little worse because it would just resort to like standard stuff. You know, a lot of baseball is like, oh, the best thing to throw in this situation is a changeup. The hitter knows that. The hitter's expecting a changeup, so maybe we should throw a fastball. And if the AI is just going to be like, yeah, throw a changeup, then there's going to be like,
I wonder because, well, first off, they pulled it from the app because only one team was using it, right?
We
In
think. We don't know for sure.
theory, that gives them an unfair advantage,
Yeah.
although you might say that it gives them an unfair disadvantage, but that's it's okay.
Yeah, and it yeah.
So at some point, I think you're right. It's going to be available to everybody. I mean, that's what's probably the most important thing here. Once they understand what it is, then everybody will have it and everybody will choose to use it or not. The other thing, though, that we're kind of envisioning AI as it exists today.
Yeah.
And AI is not absolutely not perfect, nor will it ever be. The question is, will it ever be better than the imperfect humans that it is simulating? And you're right, it's all about simulation, but it has a significantly vaster quantity of data to work on, and it has significantly faster reasoning capabilities. But the other thing that's missing from the comparison is that I think not yet, but eventually, it will have the opportunity to be more. I don't want to say this. I don't want to say consistent because, as the example you just pointed out, is consistency is not necessarily the right thing to embrace. But I think it'll have the ability to be more strategic than the coach. Remember, the coach is human by definition. He's going to make mistakes. All the AI has to do is make fewer mistakes, and it's adding value.
I guess it's in sports, making calls like this, it's really hard. Mistakes aren't black and white. It's not like that was the right call, that was the wrong call. You don't know. Like if you say throw a fastball instead of a changeup, there's an outcome. You don't know if the outcome would have been the same or worse if you had made another decision. And you don't know the hitter could just be very good at detecting what the pitcher's throwing. So if the, you know, I mean,
That's
so
what the
it's
AI brings to
hard.
the table, right? I mean, it can analyze millions and millions of scenarios with, say, even this specific pitcher and this specific batter, and just factor all that in a way that indeed a good manager will probably do from his gut without even realizing it. But again, the AI just has to be slightly more accurate, more often.
It has. I don't think it will be measurably more accurate in its calls. At least not the type of AI we have now. So even
Certainly not
evolving
today's.
faster and faster and better large language model AI, it'll have to be something different. And even then, we'll have to see because I think it's one of those things where the randomness and the fact that you're not controlling the actual thing. Like you're not saying, okay, pitcher, throw a fastball, outside corner. It's like, well, the pitcher's got to execute that. And the problem is that baseball would always be already be very easy for the pitcher if they could do that consistently.
Yes.
So just having something, an AI tell you to throw this pitch in this location, as opposed to your manager telling you that, doesn't mean you're going to execute that pitch.
The AI has this record
Yeah.
of this particular pitcher's ability
Yeah.
to do
So
what
does the
he
manager,
does.
though.
Well, does he though,
Yeah,
right?
well, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He has a gut sense for it for sure. But does he actually have, I don't
At
know.
the major league level, they definitely do. And they have people feeding them all this data, and they have a lot of prep that they do. So can you just, in middle of January during lunch, ask a manager about like a particular player pitcher matchup? And no, but the preparation for the game's on, everything's happening. That information's there, and they've got people whispering in their ear, and standing right next to them, other coaches saying, hey, I've got a I watched the bullpen session of this pitcher as they were warming up, and I don't think they've got their curveball today. Have your pitcher swing, when it's a count in their favor. That kind of thing happens, and so in a way, I don't know if you could get all the information or even predict what information needs to go to the AI. It's a tough thing. I think the bottom. It's interesting that a team is trying this or was trying this. But they probably are still trying it. It was just saying, hey, don't use your league issued iPads for this. They
But they're
still can
still
have the
allowed to bring
people in the
other,
office.
right?
You can't. They were all. They have already for decades been looking at statistics and
Right.
giving recommendations on things.
Right.
Now they just have AI tools, but are the AI tools are a tiny step beyond the database tools that they had before, right? It's been
Right.
an evolution for them, not a, oh, suddenly we went from pieces of paper with tables of data to like an AI telling us what to do. It's like they went databases, algorithms, tools that quickly allowed them to look up information as they
Right.
typed and clicked and all of this, and throwing the information out there for them in better and better ways. And the AI kind of gradually got in there and said, oh, here's a better way to get to this data than what you had yesterday, but it's
Right.
slightly better.
No, we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. Like I said, remember, this is the worst AI we're ever going to see.
Yep. Cool. All right. So here's an interesting kind of non-AI story, which you may have seen. It got covered by a few different outlets. So flock cameras, right? Flock cameras, are these cameras that city and county governments are contracting to basically be put up everywhere to record everything. And usually they're being sold on the whole, like, oh, we can help stop car thefts. We can help track down criminals and stop crime and all this stuff, that's what they've been selling it as. And then there have been problems that have been coming up where the information's being abused. It's being used beyond that scope for things. And this has gotten a lot of people very angry. It's funny, I was actually at a music festival this weekend, and one of the bands was doing a very, like community building kind of thing. And one of the things they said was, talk to somebody you don't know and ask them this question, right? So, they got people in the audience between songs asking things. And one of the questions they asked is, what makes you angry? And a woman who I talked to actually said the flock cameras make her angry. And I
Sure.
was like, yeah, no, there's problems. They're, being used, like there's statistics showing that they're mostly being used for things like having police officers stalk their exes or women that they meet on the job, that kind of
Right,
thing.
right.
A lot of issues. But here's what's interesting. They become such fodder for social media where people are pointing out, look at these flock cameras that are installed here. Here's what we're going to do about these flock cameras. Here's some ideas about, getting the flock cameras out, that there are people, social media influencers, that are using it on their channels as like, let's get views. Let's talk about flock cameras today. And at least one, but probably more, are actually faking it, right? So social media influencers fake lots of things lots of times, right? A long time ago, I remember one of the first cases was travel influencers. Basically, the people caught that they actually weren't traveling to where they were.
Right.
They would do like, oh, I'm in the Bahamas now, and there's all this, and here's what I'm doing, here's what I'm drinking, here's what I'm wearing. And then people were like, you know, those photos, they're fake. Like, you're not actually in the Bahamas. You're just making this all up. Well, somebody now has made up flock cameras content. In other words, destroying flock cameras, blocking flock cameras, doing all this stuff. And they didn't actually do any of it. They're just using video special effects to make it look like
Right.
they're actually out there fighting the fight against flock cameras, which is really interesting. I'm not sure if that's a just more in the story of people fake stuff online to, you know, be influencers, or it's interesting that the outrage against flock cameras is so much now that you could actually profit from faking that you're doing
So
it.
profiting from fake hate is nothing new.
Yeah.
Especially in today's political climate,
Well, there's a
right?
difference between, you know, saying you hate something just to get views. The person here in this story that we'll link to certainly could have done that, and there'll be
Right.
no problem. They could lie and say, "Oh, I hate them," when they don't really care. They just want views. They actually created fake content.
Yes. Well, and I'm
Yeah.
sure that that's happening in other venues as well, and other to on other topics as well.
Sure.
But yeah, I think the flock cameras are an easy target because it's something that, especially in the affected areas, people can walk down the street and see one, right? I mean, it's in their neighborhood. They know that it's in their neighborhood. And it's very easy to basically get somewhat conspiratorial about that, about what's going on with all the information. Just
Sure.
because it's been misused some, that opens the door to claims that it's being misused much more, whether or not it really is.
Yeah, and one of the main points of the story, which bleeds over into other things outside of Flock, is the fake cease and desist letter. Right. So
Yeah.
one of the easy
Yeah.
ways is you put a few things out there saying, "Oh, I hate Flock cameras, and here's what I'm going to do," and then you fake a cease and desist letter. You've got AI to make one up, or you find a real cease and desist letter from the company and you doctor it to make it look like it's to you. And then you post that and people get outraged. But the company didn't actually issue a cease and desist letter because you didn't actually do anything. You were just posting fake video of you doing something.
Right.
And now people, that like really ramps it up because it gives you clout. It's showing, hey, you know, people should pay attention to you because the company is now actively trying to stop you. And this has been done in other sectors as well, just, you know, throwing those things up there as fake. But fake, it's really something. I mean, you and I know from just being years and years of being on the internet, you know, copyright infringement notices and fake and cease and desist stuff is really frustrating, and anxiety. There's a lot of anxiety around it, right? So to actually have influencers that are pretending they've gotten these, I mean, I guess it's probably a fine feeling because they know they didn't really get them, right? So they've got nothing to worry about. But at least getting other people to actually worry for them on their behalf.
Well, and they're certainly faking their worry as well, right? I mean, if they're on camera, of course, they're acting very worried and very frustrated. I saw one of the video titles, I think, was "I Could Be Going to Jail Soon," so that kind of thing. Where, of course, you know that nothing of the sort is even close to happening.
Outrage. Yeah, outrage. And it also brings into question is like, does this dilute the real fight against, you know, for privacy? You know, if you're in this for the fight of like flock cameras are infringing on our privacy and this is why they're bad, then somebody like this comes along and, you know, and now they're diluting it. And also the boy who cries wolf kind of thing too, because there are people that have really gotten cease and desist letters when they've done stuff like this. And now people are going to be skeptical of that.
Right. Right. Which is unfortunate. I agree. But you're right. All of anything that, like this that turns out to be fake dilutes the underlying argument, the real issue underlying it all.
So, yeah. So, in the end, these people are actually fighting counter to the cause. Even if they really mean well, like they're obviously their main thought is their own, getting famous on their own.
Yep, getting
But
clicks, getting views.
even if they're like, well, I'm going to get my clicks, but I actually want to like be truthful to what I believe in. But now by faking this stuff, they're actually hurting the cause. So whether they believe in it or not, they're hurting the cause of whatever it is that they're faking, which is unfortunate.
And what's frustrating, of course, is that while what he's faking seems very extreme, I don't think you need to fake it. I think
Yeah.
that the truth is sufficient enough, is concerning enough for people to take action or at least pay attention.
Yeah, well, I think in the case of when somebody's faking taking action, like destroying a camera
Right.
or blocking it or something, when they're faking it, they're coming from a position of safety, right? Like,
Yeah.
I don't want to get caught doing something where I
Right.
can actually get in trouble. So I'll just fake it and get the same clout
Right.
from doing that, that I would have gotten by doing it. Whereas there might be people out there actually doing it for real, who are then afraid to actually post it at all
Right.
because they might
Right.
get in trouble. It's yeah, there's a lot to think about there.
There are a couple of fun things specifically about the Flock camera that just, I don't know, they made me laugh. There's one meme running around pointing out, and I don't know if this is true, of course. I haven't done the research. Pointing out that, each Flock camera contains like 3 pounds of copper.
Oh
Do
yeah.
with that information what you will, that kind of thing.
Or like stickers that are like, this such and such stickers that you can get free happen to be the same size as the lens of a Flock
Interesting.
camera. Do, you know, yeah.
Well, anyway, in going back to AI, one of the news stories that happened last week was what I'm referring to as the OpenAI breakout. Basically, the OpenAI folks in their research labs, one of their AI models, supposedly. And I'm using their terms because I really don't know what the correct term for this would be, but it supposedly broke out. It broke out of containment and it basically went over to a competitor's servers, I would assume, on the internet and exfiltrated some data that it shouldn't have. The best way that I can put this into terms that might make it a little easier for other people to understand is that we're already using AI that knows how to search the public internet, right? If you, it's one of the things that got added relatively quickly because AI was, woefully out of date based on when the la large language model was updated. But if you augmented that with real-time search, great. You've got more current information. So by definition, AI currently has the ability to reach out to the internet and scan, scrape, consume publicly available information. In this case, what it seems to have happened is that AI model, that AI model apparently also used stolen credentials to then sign into a private network. It's not unlike basically a hacker trying to do exactly the same thing, which is why when you mentioned earlier that, AI ultimately it's a simulation. It's a simulation of human behavior. This is a great simulation of human behavior, right? I mean, this tool decided it needed some information and had the ability to hack into somebody else's account to get it. So it did, just like a hacker would have. It's unfortunately not quite similar. I mean, it's not quite that simple. It is messy. There were guardrails in place, but apparently, for some reason or another, the guardrails had gotten turned down, for lack of a better term. OpenAI has yet to be really forthcoming with what exactly happened. But I think that what's interesting about this, most of all, is that this is playing directly into everybody's fears that AI is going to break containment and going to do more than just exfiltrate some data. What are the more, I'll call it mundane scenarios, but a probably what I would expect to be the next level of this is for an AI to not just go out and illegally or hack into a competitor's servers and exfiltrate some data. It could go in and poison some data. It could go in and wreak havoc in a perhaps hard to detect way. And of course, many people are concerned that it is going to do significantly worse than that, depending on who it hacks. I'm hoping that OpenAI will share details about exactly what happened, because I think all of the AI companies need to take this seriously. They need to be aware of what's possible and under what conditions these kinds of things can happen. Obviously, Anthropic has a different implementation than OpenAI, but the concepts are still there. I'm also curious as to why the guardrails were perhaps lowered a little bit. But it was an interesting story, and like I said, hopefully it's not the first step of the AI takeover.
Yeah, it's interesting that that obviously there's these guardrails. We keep hearing about these guardrails, and they're not going to be perfect.
Sure.
And I guess part of it is that they just need to fix the holes in the guardrails occasionally, and we're probably going to end up with a lot more like a lot of situations where the guardrails actually exceed what they want to do. Like for instance, this week I actually tried to use ChatGPT to get a news summary. I wanted to see if it could just summarize the news for me. So I gave it a bunch of RSS feeds, and that I have a like an RSS reader, and basically it was like, oh, I can bring up a page that shows me all the headlines from. So I was like, take these same RSS feeds and just give me a summary, like write it up as a summary that, because the idea is then I could have audio read it to me while I'm walking the dog. And it wouldn't work because it couldn't get these RSS feeds because its fetching tool is not sophisticated. Its fetching tool is very sophisticated in grabbing web pages, not sophisticated at grabbing anything else. So the RSS feeds were like, I can't get these. A lot of them are compressed. A lot of them, it just couldn't do it.
Interesting.
ChatGPT couldn't. Claude was able to. Then I was like, oh, that's no problem because I actually have my own RSS reader. I could just give you access to that. Here are the RSS, like the actual RSS feeds. I'll even
Right.
bundle up for you as one RSS aggregate file. Just read this file and summarize the news. It came back and said, oh, I can't do that. I'm ready for the punchline here. I can't do that because I can't summarize a large body of copyrighted material like that. Which, of course, was hilarious. It was like, that's how you exist. That's you. You are a summary of a large body of copyrighted material. So that was hilarious that it couldn't do that. And eventually I gave up at least trying to use ChatGPT to do this project because of the inconsistency, because I think multiple guardrails, like the copyright thing, like being able to access specific URLs instead of searches. Like I even found out when I said, go to the source and look at this web page and summarize the news. It was like, yeah, I can't go to a specific page. I could do a search though and look at the results of that search. I know. But it really felt to me like, oh, there's a guardrail there. And you are like,
Interesting.
you found this way around the guardrail. If you didn't, then probably people would complain that you couldn't do anything on the web, right? What you're talking about, reaching out and getting information and searches, wouldn't be possible unless there was some way to do it. But some guardrail saying, yeah, don't take a specific URL and allow them to actually say, go here. And, anyway,
I wonder,
interesting.
I wonder if the guardrails in some cases are external. By that I mean, I wonder if the AIs are bumping into
Yeah.
CAPTCHAs. The whole Cloudflare thing where you have to prove you're a human before it'll even display you a web page. Those sites are electing perhaps to make themselves invisible from this kind of access.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. There's several ways. One is a lot of AI tools like ChatGPT are actually using these networks to go out and find web pages, load them up, things like Cloudflare and stuff like that, to go out and load them up. They're not actually sitting there with their own browser. They're actually calling out to something and say, load this web page, give me the contents of it. And a lot of these are being blocked because they're not just used for AI, they're used for scraping tools and all sorts of things, bots. Also, I found that when you have bot restrictions on your web server, because I had a universal bot restriction, and I actually had to go and say, oh, let Claude through, so Claude could actually, do something with a file I had on my server that I specifically made for it. So there's that, and then there's CAPTCHAs. That's a good point. Trying to access the information, probably also the subscription stuff. It probably hits some web pages, and the web
With a
pages say you have to be a
paywall,
subscriber. And Claude's like, oh, I'm not a subscriber. So, or OpenAI is saying that. So yeah, a lot of stuff, which is basically it's a mess. And when you think of all like the data centers going up and all the money being invested, and when there's these fairly obvious like roadblocks on both sides, the guardrails on the one side and the blocking on the other side, that will stop AI from doing something as basic like, tell me what's happening in the news today. And then it gets stuck on, this. That's a real problem.
I'm sorry, Gary, I can't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and I've also heard, just because you brought that up, this is the second time somebody's referenced that. I've heard from people that are, using it to create media, to create video, getting the sorry, I can't do that prompt. And one way to get around that is to simply say, yes, you can. And then sometimes it says, okay, and then it does it. So, but which actually may not be, I mean, for some kinds of guardrails, may be fine. It's the same as saying, are you sure you want to continue, kind of thing. But I don't know. It's kind of
It's funny. I
weird.
do remember a story. I don't remember the details, but the thing I took away from it is, you can't do that. If you say yes, you can, enough times, if you're just persistent enough, then eventually the AI gives up and does what you asked.
Yeah, and you should be persistent. I mean, it's like a human. This morning, I asked ChatGPT to create a playlist for me in Apple Music based on a screenshot, because I wanted a playlist based on a set list for a concert, and I was like, oh, usually the way I do this is I bring up the set list, and then I manually search for each song and add it to a playlist. And I thought, can ChatGPT has an Apple Music plugin that one of the things it should do is allow you to create playlists. So I said, here's a screenshot, make me an Apple Music playlist. And it did it, but the little widget that came back wasn't working. It was like half, like it, like there was a bug or something, and it just didn't work. So I said, what's up? Why isn't it working? And it said, yeah, I guess I can't do that. And it said, here's a list of the songs. The way to do it is to make it yourself. And I said, no, I could have done that before. You have the ability to do this. Try again. And it said, okay, trying again. And then this time it came up with the same widget, but the widget was fully formed. Whatever little hiccup in creating the widget before wasn't there. And it had the right button to say add as a playlist to Apple Music. So
It's like dealing with a 5-year-old who wants to give up right away. You just say, no, go back and do it again.
Go try again. You were almost there.
Oh,
Anyway,
that's funny.
getting away from AI,
We're in
here's
love with you.
we hey, we're hitting like a trifecta here. We've talked about flock cameras, we've talked about AI, and now we're going to talk about drones. So, an interesting story I saw was a group of schools is going to be trying out a new way to protect itself against school shooters. That is a little fleet of drones that will be on site at the school. So the technology is basically this: a box or boxes around the school that contain inside them drones. when an alarm is sounded, or triggered, the boxes open up and these drones take off out of the boxes. And the drones are controlled remotely by humans somewhere. So the
Right.
idea is a lot of schools have these. One school triggers the alarm. Suddenly all the boxes open, the drones start flying, and a team of people springs into action to control the drones. And then the idea is the drones can, first of all, do reconnaissance, find out what's going on, what's the situation, but also have a variety of other things that they could do, distract with beeps, perhaps pepper spray, pepper balls, being fired, and also bump, just collide directly with a suspect, all remotely controlled, which is interesting from a technology standpoint. But to every time I see a story like this, I always think of, like, this sounds expensive. And I think we have, especially institutions like schools or and government institutions and companies sometimes see shiny technology like this,
Of course.
and they see it as a different price point than the alternative. So something like this comes out and say, oh, boxes of drones, teams of remote drone pilots, high-tech ways to stop a school shooter. Yeah, that's going to cost a lot. Let's find the money for it. And then they overlook, well, couldn't we just hire another security guard?
Right.
Like, employ an actual security guard. Maybe we already have one or two or 10, depending on how big the school is. Hire a couple more. It may actually be cheaper. Now, the cost for this, it's hard to determine, but it does actually say something in the article that we'll link to about it. It's something like 50 cents per square foot per year. So you're
That's an
leasing.
interesting measure.
Yeah. So the idea is, bigger camp, bigger school campus. Now, I don't know if that's just in the building, if that's the whole campus, like outside the building, you would think would
Right.
have to be included. But the schools are pretty big square footage
Yeah.
places. So 100,000 square feet of multiple floors in a school with a campus and all that. I don't know if that's big or small. I don't know what. But I mean, a big house in the suburbs is 4,000 square feet. So I don't think 100,000 square feet, including the grounds outside, is, but that's 50, so that's $50,000 a year, which you
Right.
think, I mean, is that what it costs to hire a security guard? I'm not sure. And then, of course, is that cost the actual cost, or is this like a startup funded, like, let's offer it cheaply to
I
get going
wonder
kind of
the other
thing?
thing that comes to mind for me right away. Well, for one thing, can you imagine being a child
Yeah.
in school and then all of a sudden, boom, your hallway is flooded with drones? I mean,
Yeah,
that would just
exactly. I know.
freak me the heck out. And I'm sure that they'll have testing days or
Oh,
drills, right,
yes.
for
Oh,
this kind of
yeah,
stuff.
sure.
What are they called? Live shooter drills. The other thing that I was thinking about, though, as I read this is let's assume that they stick with pepper spray or pepper balls
Yeah.
and not escalate, because of
Yeah.
course somebody will suggest escalating it. Even so, what happens when the active shooter is harmed by the pepper spray or the pepper ball? They're subdued and they decide to sue the school,
I
right?
guess.
Because
I thought you were going somewhere else with that, but yeah.
they were injured by these countermeasures. I don't
I
know. I
was.
mean, I mean, obviously we're a lawsuit happy country, and this just seems like one of those scenarios that's just asking for someone to do it.
Or I was thinking you were going more like, what if we escalate beyond pepper balls to something more, let's say, damaging than pepper balls?
Right.
And somebody hacks into the system. So yeah, that could be a problem, right? And then maybe somebody doesn't even hack into the system. Like, you've got a team of drone pilots located somewhere that now can control these things. in any school that they want. That sounds a little
Yep.
dangerous as well.
One of them gets it wrong, and pepper sprays a teacher rather than the
Yeah, pepper or worse. Oh yeah, I mean, you're talking about yeah having to make some calls, having to, there's a lot to unwrap there, and I mean, there's good stuff too. I mean, using technology, maybe this can be cheaper. Maybe this can be pretty inexpensive, especially if it's surveillance. The surveillance, the beeps, and the bumping into are all kind of like relatively cheap. I don't know how hard it is to arm one of these with pepper balls, but the
Right.
other things could be done with pretty cheap drones. And the idea that you could have some cheap drones ready to go, a remote team, and if it is inexpensive, like that's the key here. If it's not this
Right.
shiny, like let's spend a ton of money on this, but an inexpensive thing that's a fraction of the cost of actually hiring an additional person, it's a
The other
tool then.
sales message that I read in that article had less to do with cost and more to do with response time,
Yeah.
right? To begin with, a security guard, who knows? Obviously, real law enforcement takes minutes to get there.
Yes.
Whereas, if your drone falls out of a cabinet down the hall from where the shooter happens to be, and they're there
Yeah.
within seconds rather than
But
minutes.
they're limited in what they can do.
Right.
There's the pepper ball thing.
It kind of boils down to, okay, we'll annoy him. We'll keep him busy by annoying him until the cops get here.
It's interesting. I'm not like, oh, this is a disaster, but it'll be something to watch. And then of
It's not a
course
slam dunk either,
the
yeah.
whole thing is the cost, really. I mean, because we hear all the time about the technology being thrown at, like AI teachers that cost way more than just hiring a teacher, that kind of deal. And also that ties into this too. It's like, school districts are, if these school districts are throwing tons of money at security measures like this, untested, untried security measures, but they're still underpaying their teachers, not having enough teachers, and too big of a ratio of students to teachers, that kind of thing. The old textbooks, at some point it's like, okay, our students are completely safe and they're learning nothing because we spent all the money on making them safe, one last little story, which hey, we can throw like lawsuits in there. As another thing. So Apple is being sued this week in one of these class action lawsuits. You know how these things are. They're being thrown at companies like Apple all the time. But the deal is that a few people got their money stolen by a fake crypto app, right? Happen, crypto apps, crypto sites, scams, all this stuff. But the deal is that the app was in the App Store, in the Apple App Store. It's against the rules, obviously, to have a fake crypto app in the App Store. I think in this case, the one actually was pretending to kind of look like a real crypto app by a real company. So people had mistakenly downloaded it, given their credentials over, and then they were able to, steal their crypto. And so, of course, the scammers pulled this off. The people lost their money, and Apple's getting sued because the deal is that, oh, they shouldn't have let that app in the App Store to begin with. And it's interesting because Apple does have rules saying you can't have this. Apple does have a review process to catch people trying to do it anyway, and for breaking all the rules, any rule. Apple's got, people trying to stop that. But it's not obviously not perfect. So what they're basically suing Apple for is not being perfect. And the question is, can they ever truly be perfect? Can they, if they're getting hit with 100, 1,000, 10,000 different fake crypto apps, is the standard that they have to be 100% perfect and block all of them without fail? Otherwise, they're liable for, getting sued.
It seems like a door that I hope the courts don't open, right? Because the alternative then for Apple is to not let anybody in, I guess.
Yeah, or have it. I mean, as an app developer myself, I have run into so many situations where submit an app that is perfectly fine, but it runs into one of the rules they've got. And the rules are there for a reason, but they overextend. That's what happens when you have rules and laws and stuff like that, is they have to be written in such a way that they make sure they try to block all the illegal stuff or the stuff they don't want in the store, but sometimes it oversteps. And you're not even close to what that is. Like, for instance, a crypto app could be the legit one. And for whatever reason, it triggers the, no, you might be fake. So we're going to put these extra things in your way. Or you simply have an information app that's like, oh, this oversteps one of the rules. Oh, but the rule is there for apps that actually trade crypto or currency or do financial stuff, not apps that give information or whatever. So it's one of those things, these class action suits. I mean, I guess there's probably lawyers behind it that are just trying to make money.
There's that, although, and I think you and I run into this all the time. People do expect perfection. And obviously, you and I both know that this is absolutely not realistic. Stuff happens. People are human. People are frustratingly human at times, but they are human. Mistakes will be made. And to expect only perfection is completely unrealistic. Unfortunately, what we have here is an attempt to try and codify that.
Exactly. And also, I mean, people did legitimately have their money stolen, but is it the right thing to do to try to get that money back from the not from the person that stole it from them,
Not from
but
them.
from somebody that made a mistake? So there's that. That's kind of an interesting thing to think about. And also, when you said people expect perfection, the only problem is that one person's definition of perfection is different than another person's, which is that whole you can't please everybody. Like, the old like I'll get the same I'll get two complaints. Your videos are too long and you go on and on about things, and I'll get the slow down and take it and include more information step by step. So, yeah, because one person's idea of perfection is for the videos to be longer and have more information in them. And the other person's idea of perfection is the videos to be shorter and quicker and not have as much detail in them.
It's amazing you say that. I hit that. I get that. I get those comments every day.
Yep.
All righty. Let's see. What's cool this week? So last night we started watching Furious. It's on Hulu. It's pretty dark, I will say that, but it's a dark police murder mystery series. The reason we cottoned on to it was because it stars Emily Rossum, who most people will know from Shameless here in the United States. It is so far very well done. We're really enjoying it. They dropped three episodes to start with. We've watched the first two. We'll probably pick up the third tonight. I'm just looking forward to it. So, like I said, if that's the kind of thing that is interesting to you, especially if you're a fan of Emily Rossum, check it out. Furious on Hulu.
Cool. All I've consumed this last week is the next book, for me at least, the next book in the Murderbot Diaries series by Martha Wells, Exit Strategy. That's where I'm up to. So I just finished that one, which I think is the fourth book in the
I
series.
don't remember. All I know is that a couple weeks ago, I mentioned the most recent one, the seventh or the eighth one or whatever. So.
So I'm got, and I know they get full size, because I think as of the fourth book, we're still novellas, right? We're still pretty short stories, and I know they
And I
get
forget, you've
bigger.
watched it on TV,
Oh
right?
yeah, yeah,
Yeah,
and
super much.
I really liked how that first the first season that we've got so far. We've got a lot of good stuff coming. A lot of attention this week to the Neuromancer series, is coming. The first, believe I can't believe it's really the first attempt to actually turn that into a TV show or movie.
My wife asked me
Such
the
an
other day
iconic book.
when we were putting together our list of things that we're looking forward to. She says, Is neuromancer something we're going to be? Yes, it is. Yes,
Yeah.
it is. Absolutely, it is.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. Let's see, in blatant self-promotion, one of the people, one of the situations people struggle with, and I know you run into this too, is sometimes you just need to have somebody lay hands on your computer. You need to be able to take it to a repair shop. You need to be able to do something physically with the machine in order to get the issues dropped, figured out. There's only so much you can do remotely, or even with our turn-based technical support kind of email situation. So the article I've got is, how do I find good local computer help? It's askleo.com/25661. It is not nearly as easy as I wish it were, but I definitely have some ideas and some guidelines for those seeking out some, again, local computer help.
Cool. I'll point to a video I did last week on ClickFix scams, which we talked about those here on the show. Yeah, I decided to do a video on them, partially, just to show examples. And I was surprised I was able to find one in the wild
Oh, really?
pretty easily. Usually, I have to just and I did make up some screens just to say, here's what they kind of look like, just to give you an idea. But I found one in the wild easily as a result of a Google search. It was actually right there on page one of the Google
Wow.
searches. You
Wow.
click on it, and there it was. I mean, and I was able to like totally. Sometimes I'm like, well, I better hide the URL and everything. But I actually saw this was so blatantly a click fix that I was like,
Wow.
nah, fine, I'll show the URL. Hopefully, they'll have. At some point, somebody's going to block this completely.
Yes.
And on Safari on Mac, it actually is blocked. Like, if you go to it, it gives you a big red screen. You have to do this stuff to get through. On Google Chrome, nope. Here it is. Here's the web page. So it was interesting. So yeah, I did a video on that, which I it has been really popular and hopefully enlightened some people to the dangers of ClickFix.
Cool. I think that wraps us up for yet
Yes.
another week. As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you here again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh273. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.